Hello, and welcome to Rock On, a podcast where I discuss influential alternative rock albums. And today, I sort of want to start us off with a concept to think about. It may sort of apply to this album, and obviously more as well. And it's sort of like, can music be too dated to enjoy in a modern context? This album, for the most part, I would say, not that case, but there are a few lyrics, a few lines, and a couple of the songs, and just thinking something for us to reflect on and then circle back to it toward the end. So today's album is one very popular, very well known, and I will first discuss, before I announce which album it is, how I came about picking it for today's episode. So I recently started a Twitter account for this podcast. If you would like to follow it, it is at Rock On Podcast VA. That's at RockOnPodcastVA. The VA is for Virginia because just Rock On Podcast was already taken. So, and in case you did not know, this podcast is recorded in Virginia. Fun fact. So if you'd want to be more interactive with it, I normally just sort of post about when each episode is out, just to let everybody know. But I plan on continuing to use it to take suggestions from my listeners. So for today's podcast episode, I put up a poll and I put down four albums and I had people vote on which one they would like to hear an episode on. And it was pretty close, 60-40% vote. So the one that came in second place, I will be doing next episode. So today's episode is on From Under the Cork Tree by Fall Out Boy, which is an album that is probably like my second alternative rock album I ever got into. My first was Move Along by the All American Rejects, which received 0 votes on the poll. That's okay though. So definitely if you want to have input on later episodes, I would say go give it a follow or just maybe check it out every so often to see when new polls go up for different episodes. I won't be doing that for every single episode, but I might continue to do it more in the future. So, From Under the Cork Tree, Fall Out Boy. This one is, influential is honestly the best word I can use to describe it because the effects of its release are wide-reaching in so many parts, in so many genres of music, and just the music industry in general. And it's just crazy how much of an impact it's really had. And it's a really excellently made album. I mean, honestly, it's miles above some of its counterparts in the same scene that it is in. I think it's, not only is it well made, it's well written, it's interesting, it's catchy. It's not all the same thing. The songs are all different in their own way. When listening to this album, even in a casual context, it never gets boring. So a little bit about the history and the making of the album. It was produced by Neil Avron, and it was recorded in Burbank, California. The music for it is composed by the lead singer and one of the guitarists of the band, Patrick Stump. The lyrics are written by the bassist, Pete Wentz. They started recording in November of 2004. There was label pushback on some of the songs. They didn't really think that they would be successful or that I think they said, like, for Sugar We're Going Down, that the chorus was too wordy and it would never catch on, but obviously they were wrong about that. The album is sort of self-reflective. Pete Wentz has said before, it's sort of like reflecting on depression and anxiety that he suffered with. He has bipolar disorder, so, and it's sort of about, you know, sort of looking back on himself and thinking about his life and who he is as a person sort of thing. There's many themes carried throughout the album. It's definitely something, while I have listened to this album like so many, like a million times practically. I mean, I first heard it I'd heard the songs, like the hit songs before in my life, but I really like first listened to it like when I was like 15. So I've known it for years now and I've listened to it countless, countless times. I've revisited every single song on the album at different points, and every song in the album has become played on repeat for me at different times. So yeah, but one thing I never picked up on though, in all of these listens, is some of the themes, because I most of the time would not listen to it all the way through. I would put songs on a playlist with other songs in between. So this time around, my latest re-listen, I did pick up on a lot more of the themes I never realized before, which was shocking to me because I have always thought of myself as knowing this album front to back. I was thinking, like, I don't even have to re-listen to it for this episode. I could literally just talk off the top of my head, not even have to take notes. But I'm really glad I did because I would not have picked up on a lot of things that I did this time. And I'll probably talk more about themes, like, when we actually get to the lyrics. But Love is about, like, failing relationships and stuff. So I'll discuss that more when we get to it. But yeah, the title is taken from the book The Story of Ferdinand by Monroe Leaf. Sorry if I mispronounced that. But pretty much it's about the story of a bull, and he would rather sniff flowers under a cork tree than fight. Which is kind of sweet. The album cover features a picture of a van in snow, and there's an audience looking. The picture is like on a stage, and there's an audience sort of looking at it. And the van in snow is actually a reference to a car crash the band got into on their way to New York City to film a music video for their song Grand Theft Autumn / Where's Your Boy, which is a song off of Take This to Your Grave, their album that came out before this one. Which I never knew that. First of all, I thought it was a picture of a van in a flood, like being washed away by floodwaters. I did not realize it was snow. I had to look at it a couple times to like see it as snow because I'd been seeing it as water for so long now. But I never really knew the meaning of the album cover. I mean, I thought it looked kind of cool. I've always thought it was a neat looking one. I have like the CD displayed on my shelf in my room and everything. And I have a shirt with it on it. Because I always thought it was nice looking, but I never really knew like the meaning behind it. So that was interesting. The band had signed with the record label Fueled by Ramen, which is pretty well known in like the alt rock scene, and then received an advance from Island Records before they recorded this album. All right, so now to go on track by track, and just a warning, most of the song titles are really, really long. A lot of you probably know that Fall Out Boy is known for really long song titles that have nothing to do with the actual song lyrics. So just a warning, they're wordy. And I'm sorry if I trip up on a few of the words. So the first song is Our Lawyer Made Us Change the Name of This Song So We Wouldn't Get Sued. It was originally titled My Name is David Ruffin and These Are the Temptations. But the band's manager and their lawyer said, you will get sued if you title it that. So they changed the title to reflect that instance. So this song sort of starts with these camera noises at the beginning, and it's sort of, I think, symbolic of the idea that the spotlight is on them. This is their second album, and it's the one where they're supposed to really make it big, per se, which is reflected in later songs. But yeah, that's what I think it symbolizes, which I never even like thought of it until last time I heard it, and this is definitely one of those songs that I would listen to a lot. So the lyrics sort of discuss how they're kind of like saying they're not really worth the hype and like they're not great role models. So don't necessarily put all your faith in them as people, which is a sentiment that continues to be echoed throughout the album. And it's also sort of they're kind of pushing back on the critics by accepting the criticisms and declaring it themselves, which happens in a lot of these songs. This sort of idea like we're not worth the hype. We're not great role models. They say we're only liars, but we're the best sort of thing. Which is, I guess, just taking what the critics say and sort of reclaiming it for themselves, which happens in more songs, like I said. It's got this like slow, soft bridge in it, which is pretty nice, and it builds up again. In general, it's not quite as fast-paced as some of the songs on the album, but it's definitely upbeat, and I wouldn't call it slow-paced either. It's a nice little intro. I mean, I like how it starts with the lyric, brothers and sisters, put this record down. Take my advice because we are bad news. So I think that's kind of funny, just saying like, stop listening now. Just we're not worth it. It's like, we're not worth the hearing you'll lose. That's what they say in it as well. So I think it's kind of fun. The next song is Of All the Gin Joints in All the World, which I kind of thought was a very sweet sort of song. I've always liked it. I liked the one line in it, I used to waste my time dreaming of being alive. Now I only waste it dreaming of you, which I've always interpreted in a more positive context of maybe you're down in the dumps and you feel like you're dreaming that your life is better sort of thing. Like you're dreaming that you're really living it. But now you're no longer worried about that because you are living it. And now you only waste it dreaming of this person that you love. That's how I've always interpreted it. I like to have that sort of positive connotation. It has this really great guitar intro, and like I said before, it is like a relationship song. It's sort of about they have like this awkward relationship, but they're really obsessed with each other, but less so each other as people, but more the idea of each other. It's also got this really slow bridge with a great guitar line, nice vocals, driving drums. It's a nice song. I think it's a great song to just put in your playlist at the beginning sort of thing. It's upbeat. It's fun. It's happy sounding. It can probably be interpreted to be not so happy meaning, but it's got a really nice happy sound to it. And I think the vocals are really nice. It's a really fun song. I don't really have too much to say about that one. I think it's good, but it's definitely not one of the standout tracks on the album. It might be one of my favorites personally, but again, there's not a super lot going on musically or lyrically that's exceptionally unique or different, if that makes sense. I definitely think it is a unique song. It's really good, but not much to say there. The next song, though, is Dance to Dance, which is definitely one of my favorites off the album. I've heard described as like the first song the band really felt like was them, uniquely them, nobody else, no influences to it. It was just them. And I agree with that. And I'd like to make the argument that it's really the most Fall Out Boy sounding Fall Out Boy song out there. I agree. It's unique. I've never heard anything like it before. I've always loved this song. It's always one of my go-tos for karaoke because it's really fun to sing. It's really hard to sing. I never sing it correctly, but I always like doing it. It's got this iconic bass line. It's a simple bass line. I'm sure those who play bass would find it fairly easy to learn, at least the beginning part. I think it gets more complex as the song goes on. But the little intro part where the bass line is playing, it's like do 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 do. It's simple, but it's effective. It's so catchy. And honestly, it's maybe the best moment of the whole song. That's hard to argue because there are a lot of really great moments in this song, but I mean, it might even arguably be the best moment off the album. It's just a really great part. It's so fun. It's so catchy. It's so simple, but it's so effective. But yeah, the song is sung. Patrick Stump, the lead singer, sings it sort of with the deeper vocals than he normally does. He sings fairly higher pitch for a lot of the songs, but the verses definitely are sung in a deeper tone. It gives it a different sound with that bass line in the background. It's sort of like a lustful song. He's obsessed with this girl. He's trying to get together with her at a school dance. But they're not getting together. It's sort of not working out between the two. And they're essentially sort of dancing until the song ends that they're dancing together with. Because assumedly they started dancing together during the song. Both realize that they don't actually like each other that much. But they're just sort of staying together until the end of the song. And the drums before the bridge are another really, really great moment, in my opinion. It's just really fast. It's not even very intricate. It's just like on, I'm trying to think. I'm blanking on like what type of drum it is up on the drum set. But that's another really great moment. It just really builds up the tension in the song, and then you have like this big bridge. This song has definitely been called out for having mildly problematic lyrics, especially in that bridge part. I can agree that they're not great morally, but overall it's a well-written song. I think the thing about this song to me is not really the lyrics. I don't think that's like the main focus of it. Obviously it's probably different for every listener, but I think the best part about this song, and I'm someone who normally is drawn to lyrics and vocals in songs, and those will always be the highlight for me most of the time, but this is a song that I listen to for the instruments, for the bass, for the guitar, for the drums, for just essentially the sound of the vocals, not even necessarily what they're saying. It's catchy, it's fun, it's really well made, a great song. If you're only going to listen to one Fall Out Boy song ever, I suggest this one. The next song is Sugar We're Going Down, which is arguably like their most famous song, definitely the most famous off this album. It's a slower song. It was the first song that I really listened to off this album. I mean, I had kind of known it before from just radio airplay, but it was the first one when I was like revisiting the album totally that I listened to first, and I thought it was really nice. At the time, I was like, wow, this is so hardcore and rock and roll, and if you know the song, it's not like that at all, really. It's kind of slower paced. I mean, it has the nice drums and guitar, but it's a slower song. The vocals in the pre-chorus are really nice. There's some really cool layering effects going on there. The song is about a relationship that's failing because they're not really meant for each other, or that's how I interpret it to be. He knows it's sort of his fault, the narrator of the song. And it talks about, like, the take back what you said, take aim at myself, which is sort of can be interpreted as the saying, I know you were right all along, or whatever, and I'm the one at fault. I'm the reason why this ended. The ending of the song, the very last chorus, is a lot faster than the rest of the song, which is interesting. I always thought that was kind of an interesting feature in it because it's a little bit unusual. A lot of songs don't end that way. Normally the last chorus is, I guess, either bigger, more finale-esque, or slower in a way. It's just an interesting way to structure the song. So it definitely makes it more unique even. So yeah, that's another great song. I guess I would consider it to be one of my favorites off the album as well. The next song is Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner, which is another one of my favorites. I know I've said that for like almost every song now, but at the end I'll give you like my actual like top few favorites. It's about an unfulfilling relationship. Essentially, the girl that's mentioned, she's cheating on her significant other with the narrator of the song, and he wants more from it. He's kind of like almost pretending in a way that he's not like the side guy for her. He wants more. He wants to be the main one in her life. And he knows that it's bothering her essentially, or that she probably wants to cut it off from what I interpret. But he doesn't. He wants more. It's got an instrumental bridge that has really great guitar work in it. This song is really interesting because there's a lot of different aspects to it. The way the verses are structured and everything. It's interesting. I like the way the vocals are sung. They're very, like, happy. It's sort of sing-songy in a way. It sounds really nice. I never really, like, knew the meaning before I looked it up recently. I just kind of thought it was a fun-sounding song. I like the drums in it. Like, before the verses and, like, at the beginning, it kind of does, like, this little build-up. And it's pretty neat. It's just an upbeat song. It's interesting because some of the lyrics are kind of like mean, but he sings them in such a happy way. Very kind of strange and off-putting when you listen back to it, but it's a fun song. I think it sounds nice. The next song is I've Got a Dark Alley and a Bad Idea That Says You Should Shut Your Mouth, Summer Song. So this song is sadder and slower. It's definitely one of the slowest and saddest songs on the album. And it's probably one of the saddest songs in their entire discography, in my opinion. A lot of people view their saddest songs as being this one, I've Got a Dark Alley, Golden off of Infinity on High, and What a Catch, Donnie off of Fool You Do. I remember I used to have a playlist, and it was the song Understanding in a Car Crash by Thursday. Actually, before it, I think it was Camisado by Panic at the Disco. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. I've actually never really heard it spoken aloud before. And then it was Understanding Car Crash by Thursday. Then it was this song, I've Got a Dark Alley. And then Golden by Fall Out Boy, which is just like a lot at once. I could never. Nowadays, my playlists are all balanced. Like if I have a sad song, I'll have a happy song after it, or just like a not sad song. But man, I had so much emotional strength then just to listen to all those songs back to back to back. But anyway, so that was interesting. But I also think it's also partially because I wasn't paying a super lot of attention to the lyrics. But anyway, I digress. So the song sort of has deeper singing, deeper vocals in it. It's a simple production. Like it doesn't have much instrumentation in the background. The focus really is on what he's saying and how he's singing it. And the lyrics are very sad. It's sort of about faking it for everyone around you. Sort of pretending that you're happy even if you're not. And it's also about comparing yourself to others and how that brings you down. Those are the concepts that the chorus talks about. And in general, the verses just are sort of about being miserable and down and out. And it's sort of about Pete wants his personal experiences. I highly suggest that you look into it more too as well, because the lyrics are really well written in my opinion. So it's a really nice song. Nice might not be the best word to describe it. It's a good song. I really like it. It definitely stands out on the album to me, especially because it's a nice slow moment in an album that is mostly upbeat and fairly fast paced. So yeah, the next song is 7 Minutes in Heaven, Ad Van Halen. So the title refers to both Ativan, the anxiety medication, and also the Out of Van Halen is a reference to Van Halen because the guitar riff at the beginning is very similar to their songs, which I can totally see. And that guitar riff is actually repeated throughout, which I didn't really realize the first couple times I listened to it, but it's definitely got a great sound. This song has really nice production quality. It's not a standout track on the album to me because there are other songs that use similar techniques that I think are a little bit better, but it's still a good song. It's sort of depressing lyrics. It's got like these driving guitars and drums throughout. It's sort of about how he needs something to sort of get through what he's going through. And he's trying to convince himself that he's not desperate and that sort of, I guess, trying to convince himself it'll be all right in the end, but sort of unbelievable. It has this really great guitar solo in it. I really like that. It's a very nice moment because this album does not have many guitar solos in it, which I guess would be my one complaint because the guitar solo in this one's really good. So I sort of wish it had more of those sort of moments. And the last chorus of it is acoustic, which I also really like. I think it sounds great and it sort of draws the focus back to the lyrics and back to the vocals. And I think it really shows off Patrick Stump's vocal capability just by highlighting, and his vocal capability on softer notes, because most of the time that his voice is showcased, it's sort of on these belting notes and runs. But I think where he really shines, maybe not the most, but where he shines and it's sort of underrated is in these softer moments. So I think that's really nice. This song also features Brendan Urie of Panic at the Disco doing background vocals. He does background vocals in quite a few Fall Out Boy songs. He's also in $20 Nosebleed and What a Catch to Donnie, both off Folia Do. And we'll talk a little bit more about his connection with Fall Out Boy later when we talk about different bands that were impacted. The next song is Sophomore Slump, or Comeback of the Year. And this title is sort of a reference, and, well, it's interesting because this title may sound like it's completely random, but it's not, unlike some of them. It's a reference to the fact that this album is really their sophomore effort. They did have one sort of album that they don't consider a studio album before their what is considered their first studio album, which is Take This to Your Grave, which came out in 2003. So this album, From Under the Cork Tree, they recognize as their sophomore effort, came out in 2005. So essentially they're saying, is this going to be our sophomore slump? Is this album going to fail miserably, or is this our comeback of the year? And I don't necessarily think it's a comeback because they weren't really down and out before necessarily. I think Take This to Your Grave was pretty well received as well and is what got them to the point where they were to be able to make this album. But, I mean, that's the phrase is the phrase. It's not necessarily them writing it to literally be their situation. They're just using a phrase and it sort of does match with their situation. So it starts with these unaccompanied vocals and they're also sort of soft, simple. I love that. And the song talks about how growing up does not always mean maturing. They're saying, are we growing up or just going down? And it's sort of, it reminds me of last episode when I talked about the song Logan Circle by the Wonder Years. And I don't know necessarily if that song is in any sort of way influenced by this one. I really don't think it is, but it's sort of a similar theme. That one is just, you know, I feel like we're not going anywhere sort of thing. And this one is the same. It's a little bit different though, and especially in the content of the verses. And obviously both the songwriters have completely different styles. But yeah, so this song is sort of, it has a lot of really great standout lyrics. When I first got into this album, it was one of my favorites. Although over time, I will say my love for a lot of the other songs has sort of eclipsed my love of this song. But I do want to highlight some of the lyrics in it. I like how they open with, we're the therapist pumping through your speakers, delivering just what you need. Sort of a reference to the fact that a lot of people resonate with their emotional lyrics and it means a lot to them. And I think that's great. And I like how they reference that. And in a way, it's sort of in a way like a shout out to the fans, like saying like, yeah, we recognize the role we play in your lives. And also in a way of sort of being a little bit full of themselves, like saying like, yeah, we're here for you. Like we're giving you exactly what you need. You wouldn't be doing as good without us sort of thing, which is sort of echoed in some of the other songs. It takes shots at critics in it. They call their own songs lies, which I'll talk about when I discuss a little bit more of the lyrics. But yeah, it's another thing, like I was talking about in some of the earlier songs off the album, where they essentially take what the critics are saying about them and they say it themselves, sort of claiming that as their own thing. Like, yeah, you're right. Our songs aren't real. We're just putting out this face to the public. It's all a facade sort of thing. This features the singer William Beckett in the bridge of the song. So now talk some more about the lyrics. My favorite lyric off of it is the line where it says, "I swear I would burn this city down to show you the light." And I think that that's, I like the sound of it in a lot of ways. And also, it's just, I like the idea of, because I'm sure everybody's had this sort of feeling before, frustration where you just wish you could get through to someone. And you're like, I would do anything to just get through to you in your head and explain why I think this way or why you shouldn't think this way or whatever. Just the idea of, like, it's hard to sometimes get through to people. And I like that because it's sort of this, you know, vivid idea of it, of how frustrating it can be to feel like somebody's not understanding where you're coming from or they're too caught up in their own beliefs. And obviously, you know, you're not always right in these situations, but when you're trying to get through to someone, you believe you're right. So it can be frustrating. Another lyric that I see cited a lot, and I've seen artwork based off and stuff, is "I've got a sunset in my veins and I need to take a pill to make this town feel okay." Sort of a reference to mental illness and how being in a place that is not great for you and not great for your mental health can really drag you down. Sort of also has that callback to the idea of not liking your hometown, very common pop punk trope. But I think it works really well in this song. There's another lyric, "The best part of Believe is the lie," which is, I think it's really nice because both when you take it out of context and in context, it has wonderful meaning to it. Well, not wonderful necessarily, but it has depth to it. And I think that having depth is a wonderful thing. I like how it's saying, you know, a lot of times when people are convincing you of something and they're saying, just believe me, I mean, it might not be based in truth. And obviously the reference of the best part of Believe is the lie, meaning you cannot spell believe without the word lie. I just think that's a really good lyric. I think it's a really well-written line. I like the idea of it. I like how you can interpret it in multiple contexts. I think it's great. So this song, altogether as a whole, I don't think is the strongest off the album. But lyrically, it just might be. Because these lyrics are great, both in context of the song and when you just take lines out. These are some really great moments. The next song is "Champagne for My Real Friends, Real Pain for My Sham Friends," which is definitely my favorite title off the album. Love that one. I think it's funny. I know it's a reference to something. I forget what, though. So this one's not, I described it as like not as hardcore, even though it's kind of hard to call the rest of them hardcore, but like even less so than the rest of them. It's got these really great vocal effects on the second verse, and sort of, if you're wearing earbuds while doing it, it'll jump around from ear to ear. And I love that. I think that's really fun. Adds another layer. A little bit annoying. Like, let's say you lose one of your earbuds if you have Bluetooth or whatever, or one of them's broken, then you're going to miss out. But if you have both of them and they're both working, then it's a great, great moment. It's also about an unfulfilling relationship. He sort of wants more with her. And this is a common theme in the songs. I was talking about common themes. I said I'd discuss them more. And yeah, this is one of the ones. These unfulfilling relationship sort of tropes. Like, he wants more than she does. She doesn't really care that much about him, not deeply. And he cares a lot about her, perhaps too much, which we will discuss in the next song. So yeah, This song, I think the real highlight, well, first of all, it has like this nice guitar part, like in the intro, that carries out throughout the song. It's got like a darker feel, that specific guitar part, less upbeat and pop punky or whatever. That's a good way to describe it. But the vocals are kind of upbeat sounding. So it's just a really fun song. It has an instrumental bridge and it showcases the bass, drums, guitar, and then vocals, like in that order. It's wonderful. I think this is a real highlight off the album and a really underrated part, because you have the bass, gets a little bit of showcase there. And I think that's nice because you really don't have moments for the bass to shine in a lot of the other songs, except for quite perhaps Dance Dance, where it really gets to shine. Then you have the drums, then you have the guitar, then you have really nice vocal moment. So great, great track. Again, this song was one that was one of my favorites when I first heard it, but now I do like some of the other songs better, but still a great song. The next song, and I'm going to speed this up a little because I'm spending a lot of time on these, but it's just because I know them really well and they have so many layers to them. The next song title is really long. It's called I Slept With Someone in Fall Out Boy and All I Got Was a Stupid Song Written About Me. Now this song is, well, it's something. It's he's sort of mistreating her. That's how I interpret it. When I look at the lyrics and I look at meanings of them and interpretations, it seems to me that he's mistreating her because she hurt him. And that's wrong. And he's saying like he used to be obsessed with her, but he's getting over her now. But it's really dark feeling. I mean, I don't know. Because you can tell like he's still mildly obsessed with her. Because he does admit to missing her. And it seems that he only really misses her now that she's no longer his. Now she's found someone better. Sort of calls her cheap. The chorus, which I actually do really like the chorus. I think it sounds really good. It's the douse yourself in cheap perfume because it's so fitting of the way you are. Can't cover it up. So he's sort of saying she's like cheap, fake. It's really mean. It's a mean line, but it's sung really nicely. But yeah, it has like the unclean vocals in the bridge, like a little bit of a screaming part, which I think is nice too. Helps shake it up a little. It's a good song, objectively. I think it's well made. And the vocals are really nice. They're very angry sounding. And I think it really conveys the storyline of this anger. However, I'm not really a fan of the storyline to it because I don't like that idea. It's just sort of, it's not great. I mean, I get that it's a song that tells a story. And you can't necessarily take all song lyrics literally because that's not how most of them are meant to be taken. Especially in this album. I believe a lot of them are sort of telling these stories and not all of them. Some of them are based off the lyricist Life Pete ones, but a lot of them aren't. And a lot of them are over-dramatized. That's just the style he writes in and layered in metaphors. And I think that's what this song is. I think it is really over-dramatized and really angry, but man, it's just really, when you hear some of these other songs and about all these unfulfilling relationships, and then you hear this one, it's just kind of like, man, that's not right. But overall, a good song to listen to. Not my personal favorite, however, I will say it is a fun listen, especially if you, you know, take the lyrics with a grain of salt and keep in mind that it's meant to be dramatic. It's meant to sound really angry and dramatic. It's not meant to be taken literally. The next song is a little less 16 Candles, a little more Touch Me. And essentially it's about him standing this girl up on a date and she's really upset, but he's sort of like, he feels that she's out of his league. And to me, it sounds like he's making excuses. This one is a fun one. It's upbeat. It's definitely more pop sounding to me. A little bit more happier sung necessarily, even though the lyrics aren't happier. But to me, it just sounds like excuses. Again, you know, take it with the dramatic context of it. But it's like he's sort of saying like, oh, poor me. I'm not good enough for you. So that's why he stands her up and hurts her feelings. He feels justified in himself and the decisions he makes. But he also is sort of blaming her in a way for being the way she is. And it's just kind of, eh. I don't like that concept necessarily. Also, when I say I don't like these concepts, I mean like in reality. Obviously, dramatic storytelling is a different case. And I think that's what these songs are. And that's the context they're supposed to be interpreted in. However, I would say, you know, you need to view them in that way. It's not right to stand someone up on a date and then try to blame it on them. That's not a cool thing to do. However, in the context of dramatic storytelling, it's a well-written song. And it's a fun one. I've always really liked listening to this one. And sort of, you know, again, if you're not taking the whole story, you take bits and pieces and apply them. It's sort of a fun song to listen to when you're annoyed with someone. The chorus is like, I don't blame you for being you, but you can't blame me for hating it, which I think is a really great line. I think it's a really well-written lyric. Sort of a great song to listen to. If someone annoys you and you're like, you know, it's not your fault, you're you, and you're good the way you are. Be yourself. But man, I can't stand you. So yeah, that's a good one. The next one is Get Busy Living or Get Busy Dying. Do your part to save the scene and stop going to shows. This one, I saw people posting the title a lot, especially during the COVID pandemic, because the whole do your part to save the scene and stop going to shows, meaning, you know, be safe. Don't go out to concerts or anything. That's not safe for COVID. So save the scene. So this one sort of starts immediately, gets into the vocals. It has these really marching drums, which I love. I think it's so unique. At first, I didn't like it, but it honestly has grown on me more and more as I've listened to it. He sort of wants revenge on her by spilling a secret of hers. And again, dramatic context, it's good. Real life, don't do it. And he's sort of saying, like, I have this power over you. Sort of sounds like blackmail in a way. Patrick Stump's vocals in the bridge are some of his very best. Another great moment. Not only a standout on this album, a standout in their entire discography, in my opinion. Love it. His angry vocals are just so full of emotion there. It's wonderful. Now, the next song is XO, which is definitely one of my favorites off the album. Might even be my favorite. It's between this one and Dance Dance for my number one favorite. I love this song. I think it's great. Again, it sort of does tell a story, and story's not great, but the way it's written is just really this driving. It's definitely more punk sounding, if that makes sense, with the way it's structured with the fast guitars and drums in the background and these longer vocals. And it's just really different. It's really unique, and I love it. And he's sort of about seeing a girl at a bar and getting together with her. And like I said, it does have like that driving guitar and drums until the end, which is slower, and it has this really finale style ending. So not only does it work as a nice finale to this song, which is so dramatic, and it takes you to the story of them getting together and then her being mad at him after he leaves and him being mad at her again and saying, oh, all you are for me, our relationship was never real, you were just a rebound sort of thing. And they're ending on bad terms with each other, and it has this finale style ending. And it also acts as a finale to the album. The highlights of this song for me are not necessarily the lyrics, again, but more so the vocals. I think the vocals are really nice. There's one of my, probably my favorite moment off the album at all is right before the second chorus of the song, there's a little vocal effect on it, on the lines before it. I'm blanking on what they are now. Oh, it's I swear, I say. He says it twice. And on the second one, it's this really nice, like, there's like this effect layered on top of the vocals, and it's sort of the instrumentals cut out for like a moment. Or I think they cut out. They either cut out or it's like way down. It's really, really well produced. That's the big highlight of this song to me. I like how it sounds. It sounds really good. So yeah, out of all the tracks, so my favorites are definitely XO and Dance Dance. But the other ones I say I like a lot are Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner, I've Got a Dark Alley, and, you know, maybe Of All the Gin Joints in All the World. That one's a little bit more, I mean, again, obviously I really love it. I love a lot of the songs, but I'm not really sure if I'd include that in my top tier off the album. So, the album was released May 3rd, 2005. It debuted at number 2 on US Billboard 200. It sold 168,000 copies in the first week and is certified RIAA double platinum. It was number 14 on RockSound's 51 Most Essential Pop Punk Albums of All Time. This list has been mentioned before, and I don't remember which album it was now. It was either Bleed American or The Upsides, but this one ranked a little bit higher than whichever one it was. So just an interesting fact. It was number 9 on Rolling Stone's 40 Greatest Emo Albums of All Time. It was number 187 on the 2000s decade end chart, which I know 187 doesn't sound very high, but think of it. Out of all the songs that came out from 2000 to 2010, or all the albums, it was number 187. That's really impressive. I think that's super cool. The more I think about it, the more impressive it becomes to me. So that's why I figured I would include it on here. The singles off the album were Sugar Going Down, Dance Dance, and A Little Less 16 Candles, A Little More Touch Me. They all got music videos. Sugar We're Going Down peaked at number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100. And Dance Dance charted at number 9. So they both did really well. They still get radio airplay to this day. I'll still hear them on the radio. Not just even alternative radio. Sugar We're Going Down gets played on pop radio a lot. Dance Dance, I hear mostly on alternative radio stations, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised to hear it on a pop radio station as well. Now, this album, like I said before, the biggest part about it is how influential it is. Fall Out Boy as a whole is a super influential band, not just in the scene, but in the general pop music landscape. I saw it on Twitter before, but there's like a chart where it explains how the wide-reaching effects of Fall Out Boy, and it's like a flow chart about all the bands that were started because of them, because Pete Wentz signed them to the label. He had, I think it used to be called Decadence Records, and now it's called DCD2. So he's responsible for signing a lot of bands, including Panic at the Disco, huge popular band. Well, now it's just Brendan Urie, but they used to be a band. So that's one. And I think also Paramore at one point was partially responsible for helping them get their career started. I don't remember exactly, so don't quote me on that one. I just feel like I remember seeing that somewhere. But also bands like Cobra Starship and stuff, and other ones as well. It's also not even just bands directly signed by Pete Wentz. And also, the way that this ties back to this album is, without this album, Pete Wentz never would have had his level of fame as he did, as he does. So yeah, another band, one I mentioned a lot, but I did read, and it was listed a lot in a lot of the research I did about band's influence. So I'm not even just saying it because I like them, but Water Parks, one of Austin Knight's first albums, was this one. Also, the band Set It Off. The frontman, Cody Carson, said that he saw Sugar Were Going Down on MTV and it really inspired him. And this album in general sort of paved the way for pop punk in the mainstream. And I've seen it cited before. And sort of artists now who aren't even necessarily straight up pop punk, but are influenced by the genre and sort of use it to combine it with other genres and make their music. So ones I've seen listed were 5 Seconds of Summer, Youngblood, Machine Gun Kelly, all these artists nowadays that use that genre within their music. I've seen the band Boys Like Girls also was inspired by Fall Out Boy, and they released their debut album a year after Fall Out Boy released this one. Also, Taylor Swift, I know I mentioned her, I think, a couple episodes ago. She lists Pete Wentz as one of her biggest lyrical inspirations in writing. So their impact is wide-reaching. Oh, also, just another side note about Taylor Swift, they performed a song with her, I forget where, but it was one of their later songs. I think it was My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark. And it was really good. Like, it was Fall Out Boy and Taylor Swift performing at some show, and it was just really amazing. Look it up. I'm sure you'll be able to find it when you look that up, but it's a really great moment. So I love that, personally. I also really like Taylor Swift. I don't know if I mentioned that before, but yeah. So back to the concept of being too dated. Can music be too dated? And I will say, my general consensus is, yeah, some stuff can be too dated. However, do I think this album is too dated? No. In fact, I don't think it's very dated at all. Like I said, there are some lyrics in it that I don't think are great, and I don't think they set a great influence. I don't think in modern context they would be as accepted as maybe they were back in the day. However, I don't think that ruins the album. I don't necessarily think it tarnishes Fall Out Boy's reputation in any way. And I do think that the album can still be enjoyed. It's just worth noting that maybe some of the lines are not great to take inspiration from. As Fall Out Boy says, don't idolize them. They're not perfect. It's mentioned in a lot of these songs on it. But yeah, I mean, any of the lyrics about sort of manipulating and using women, I'm not a fan of personally. But I think a lot of them are to be taken in a dramatic context, not a literal context. The only real danger I see to having those lyrics in this album personally is that some people may not understand that it's in a dramatically written context, and they may take it literally and think that these things are okay, which they're not. But I think, you know, as long as you understand where it's coming from, it's okay to listen to it and enjoy this sort of stuff. I do, however, think that some music can be too dated. I could not think of any examples off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's stuff out there that is like absurdly offensive and wrong and is not really, can't really be enjoyed in a modern context. However, I don't necessarily think this album falls into it. But since I figured it'd be a good time to bring up the topic, I think it's sort of fun to sort of explore maybe bigger topics on the podcast as well, and really sort of get everyone thinking. I mean, it gets me thinking. When I was listening to this album back, my latest re-listen, it really did get me thinking about that concept. So I thought I'd bring it up to my listeners and see what you all think. Again, like I said, it's not a perfect match for this album, the concept to bring up, but I think it's nice to sort of look deeper at times. So again, if you want to keep up with the podcast and maybe have some say in future episodes, follow at Rock On Podcast VA on Twitter. Maybe I'll eventually make an Instagram as well. That is to be determined. We will see how the Twitter goes for now. But yeah, give it a follow or just check it out at some point. I might post like behind the scenes stuff. Maybe we'll see. And yeah, I'll update on episodes then. And you can find the links there. Next episode, based off the poll, will be on Leaving Through the Window by Something Corporate. So get excited for that one. And then probably after that, I'm definitely want to lean a little bit away from pop punk world, because I know a lot of these episodes have been very pop punk centric. So maybe something else in the alternative rock world. Maybe I will solicit more input from my followers on Twitter. So we will see. All right. This has been Caitlin. Thank you for tuning into Rock On, and I will see you again soon.